And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's enjoying your day before Thanksgiving on this rainy Wednesday. But we're not going to let that get you down. We were due for some rain. I mean, it's been beautiful for a good while here on the day before Thanksgiving as we all get to stuff our faces tomorrow. But we got a lot of things to prepare for. We also will be on live on Friday show, leading you into the weekend, which there's so much to talk about over the weekend. Darren McFarland down here in rainy Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is hanging over in East Nashville, not in East Tennessee, but in East Nashville. Chase McCabe has the day off, and Elijah Campbell is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Titans Colts is one game we'll be talking about. Another game we'll be talking about Sunday night. Yeah, Nashville SC. How about that? Advancing to the Eastern Conference semifinal in the MLS playoffs as they shut out Toronto yesterday, last night. I guess it was last night. It was about a three-hour match, and it was a lot of fun. It was intense. I felt good. I felt like I lost some weight after that match. It got hairy. It got crazy. By the way, Nashville SC, three goals negated because of offsides.
Wasn't that something? How
many times does that happen?
Well, it's never happened that I've seen, but of course they do it different now. Like, it's like the offside challenge in hockey. Before the flag, you know, they put the offside flag up before the play ends, so you would never have that before, the way they used to call soccer. But now with the video review, what they do, and I can see why they do this. If it's really close, but the guy thinks it's offside, he'll let the play continue. So after the goal goes in, then he puts his flag up and says, I think he was offside. So that's the call on the field, and then the review to see if it's wrong. And I think all three, honestly, were probably right. The third one, I really would have liked to see a better camera angle to really see it. But that was incredibly frustrating. We're going to talk to Gary Smith about this. But think about the perseverance they had to have, because not only did they have those three, they had, what do you think the number was of unreal chances where they just didn't finish? They didn't even make the goalie make a save on most of them. They had these gorgeous plays, and they just could not connect. They hit the crossbar, or they send it just wide. But it was maddening. You know, if they had lost that game, they would have said, boy, we should have won it. But you know, all that being said, they outplayed the defending Eastern Conference champions, heavy favorite. They deserve to win that game.
Hasn't Toronto been to the MLS final, what, four out of the last 5 years, something like that?
I think it's something like that. They have been a dominant team in the East for a long time. And if you know, even if you're just a casual soccer fan that just watches the World Cup, which I think I would classify myself as, I'm moving up because I'm certainly planning on following our team. But you know, Jozy Altidore and Bradley and guys who have played for the national team, you know, they have a high paid roster. They have a guy that might be the MVP, Toronto. So that's a. And you heard Taylor Twellman on our show yesterday.
I thought of him. I thought of that interview yesterday.
He said he called it apples to oranges, right, in terms of the talent level between the two teams.
But he followed it up with a butt.
Yeah, and his butt was right on. But I don't think even he thought that Nashville would take the game to Toronto the way they did. They had way more chances, way more shots than Toronto did from the start to the finish. They just caught them on the right night, and they were the better team.
Well, especially the second half. They really took over.
Big time.
They dictated the pace, right? They were in control of the second half, for sure. But cool. I mean, it was fun to watch. Now on to Columbus, Ohio. Not to play in the big, you know, not to play in the shoe against the Buckeyes, but against the Crew on Sunday night on ESPN.
Wow.
Which will be fun. 7 o'clock.
And that's one of the, I think, is maybe somebody could help me on this. I think Columbus is one of the original franchises. If you've ever driven through Columbus, they've got their own soccer-only stadium that they've had for a long, long time. There was actually some speculation they might be moving a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it wasn't. Remember
that?
It was almost done, right?
It looked like it was done. Where were they going to go? Dallas or something? Or I forget exactly where they were going to go. But that'll be interesting. So the road show continues. More soccer. This is great. Darren, big news has just come down. Did you see it?
No. Oh. Do tell.
Nick Saban has tested positive again. This time he is symptomatic for COVID-19.
Well?
Very mild symptoms. Test will not be categorized as a potential false positive. They think this one is definitely a positive test. He will follow all appropriate guidelines and isolate at home. So they get the news that they're number one last night, which didn't surprise anybody, and they get this news today. Ouch.
This morning we received notification that Coach Saban tested positive for COVID-19. He has very mild symptoms, so this test will not be categorized as a potential false positive. He will follow all appropriate guidelines and isolate at home, which means he will not be a part. This is not what I'm reading. That it stops at he will isolate at home, and then my commentary is, and that means he will not be a part of the Iron Bowl on Saturday.
Right.
And there you
go. That adds a wrinkle. Sure.
You think?
Wow.
By the way, this is going to be the first ever game, right? Alabama's played without Nick Saban since he's been their head coach. True.
Oh, I would. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's. We would know that, right? If there had been another game, we would have known if something would have happened.
Yeah.
So, what will the Alabama Crimson Tide look like without, you know, arguably the greatest college football coach ever on the sidelines?
That's a good question.
Against their big rival,
who runs the team? Like, who says we're going for it on 4th and 2?
Lane Kiffin. Apparently, the just come out of Oxford that he is not going to coach this game, and he's going to fill in for little Nicky. And Lane Kiffin is going to take a week off from Ole Miss and be the Alabama head coach. Maybe Rich Rodriguez could finally come home and go to Tuscaloosa and coach Alabama. Rich Rod, his schedule's open. What's Rich Rod doing? Nothing.
Where is Rich Rod? I don't even know.
He's probably on the Big Ten Network or something.
Well, let's actually say who it could be. Could it be Sarkisian?
I mean your guess is as good as mine.
He's got the head coaching experience, but he is running the offense. That's a really interesting question.
Is this the opportunity Butch Jones has been waiting for this whole time? Is this why he stayed at Alabama?
Everybody will think about him. There'll be plenty of jokes, I think, along those lines the next 48 hours for sure. But I don't think he's eligible, right? He's not officially on the coaching staff, right? He's just like a consultant or, you know, he has the cubbyhole, the cubicle.
Come on, he's been bumped
office
up by
space.
Now. He's got to be the longest intern ever in the history of college football. I think he's been bumped up. He's been bumped up a little. He can't be at the same level when he first got there. That's been, 4 years?
So you're saying they could call him up from AAA to run the show?
I think he is. Yeah, I do not believe he is an intern, an unpaid intern.
Well, as we speak in real time, I'm just watching the feed. I just wonder how long it will be before they announce what their plan is. Right now, it's all the little details about his symptoms, and they definitely have confirmed that he will not coach on Saturday. Wow. Just another chapter in the story. What a story this season is, just fighting through to try to get through it.
Speaking of that, here you go. American Football Conference putting out Cincinnati coming off their big win over UCF. Cincinnati ranked, seventh?
Seventh, yep.
Just going off the top of my head, I think Cincinnati was seventh in the rankings last night. They were scheduled to play Temple this Saturday.
Not happening.
It's been declared a no contest.
What? That's a new one.
I know. I've never seen that one.
You sure that wasn't a quote from Dabo Swinney?
That's coming from the conference. It says the game will be declared a no contest.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't know what that means.
I know some people that have pled no contest to charges against them.
We do know people that have pled no contest, yes, but
I think
I've never
Michael
heard
Irvin,
of a football game pleading
Michael
no
Irvin
contest.
Back in the day pled no contest to something, one of his adventures that he had in the White House back in the day.
Apparently Cincinnati and Temple were coming up on charges, and they have pled no contest.
But what does that mean?
I don't know.
It's not a forfeit. It's not a. We're going to try to make the game up. Why don't they just say that we can't play the game?
Canceled or postponed is the language we get. No, no contest.
So Cincinnati's record is 7-0 with a no contest.
Is that going to be notated
on their record?
If you've noticed, like, and I'm trying to learn this with MLS, right? Like they it's kind of going back to the old hockey days, right? You've got like extra categories,
right? Yeah, in hockey, you used to have the four categories back
right.
when you could still tie. They had wins, mm-hmm. losses, ties, and overtime losses. Now that was confusing.
Maybe we're getting some extra categories in college football.
Good grief!
There's got to be a reason why, right? Because Cincinnati is seventh last night, and today they declare it a no contest. There has to be a reason why they're saying that.
Cincinnati still has a game against Tulsa, right? Which is a ranked team. It's not a super sexy game, but every quality opponent they can play is important. Even if they don't make the playoffs, they're trying to get into the big group of bowls, right? So there's a lot of speculation that they would like to go. Maybe they should go play somehow BYU, who was dissed last night, right, because of their poor schedule. They're 9-0 and they're 14th, right? People were wondering how high BYU would be. You know how I always kind of rip on the rankings at this time? I'm like, it doesn't mean anything. But this year, there was a lot of people watching to see where they would put all these things, all these teams, based on all of the different circumstances surrounding. Like you have Clemson, who has missed their quarterback. They haven't played in a couple weeks. You have some teams that have played five games. Some teams have played three games. Some teams that have played a full season. I mean, there is a lot to deal with there.
So I've dug a little deeper into this, and I've literally learned nothing other than the digging a little deeper says both programs are dealing with COVID issues. Okay, well, that's fine. I mean, we've had that, which has led to a postponement or a cancellation
of dozens of games. Yeah,
right. This has been every week in college football since they started. But for some reason, both programs dealing with COVID issues has had the conference declare it a no contest. I don't know what that means. I'm at a loss.
We have a big Cincinnati fan in our midst, of course, that has texted that the game probably would have been a no contest anyway. Because Cincinnati would have been
I don't know much.
Pretty heavily favored. Temple is a lot better than they've been in past years, but this is not the best Temple team. But that is curious. That's a new terminology.
Did Temple just play East Carolina?
I don't know. I have not followed the
Saturday
season.
Elijah, did Temple just play East Carolina?
Can't say with certainty, but I'll look it up.
Why are you asking us?
I'm going to plead no contest. Well, the reason I say that is because I think that's the game that I'm thinking about. They learned about 15 minutes prior to kickoff. Like Temple was ravaged. Like all of a sudden, like half of their roster wasn't playing, and it was like 15 minutes before kickoff.
Well, we know Kentucky had that, right?
They had
15 guys the night before the game or the day before the game out, and now
East Carolina beat them like 31-3.
28-3.
Yes. Okay, so it was that. Okay, so that was the game. So East Carolina wins easily. So Temple, listen to this. So here's a little, and then we got to get to Paul Feinbaum. Here's a little betting thing, you know, as we talk about DraftKings and now that this is legal in the state. Temple was a 3-point favorite over East Carolina. They were the home team. They were a 3-point favorite. And all of a sudden, 15 minutes before the game, that game goes off the board. Completely it goes, and everybody, you know, 15 minutes before kickoff, people that were interested in that game, they're going, what's going on? It's because they learned 15 minutes before kickoff, rut-row, the books would have taken a beating if they didn't take it down because, like I said, they learned that Temple, like half their roster wasn't going to play. And, of course, the line when they brought it back up was East Carolina by 7. So it went from Temple favored by 3 to East Carolina by 7. And, of course, you just heard it. They won 28-3 because of that. So not surprised they were dealing with this last week in their game against East Carolina. All right, we will come back with Paul Feinbaum. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
All them dogs are counting down, about to put the anchor down. Hotty toddy, who's it going to be? Cowbells and swamp, the ag is wrong.
There's nothing like the SEC. All right, you know what that means when you hear that at 2 o'clock every single day. Yep, our next guest. Normally it's Thursdays. We're not doing a show tomorrow as everybody gets geared up for Thanksgiving. Paul Feinbaum has been nice enough to slide to Wednesday, the day before. And he can be heard every day 2 to 6 here on ESPN 94.9. Paul, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. Until about 10 minutes ago, it had been a pretty quiet morning.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Boy, well said. We started off the show and quickly went in a different direction. And let's just start with I need your input. I don't know if you have a law background or not, but typically when these games get they because of COVID issues, they either get postponed or canceled. Well, we've got a new level. Cincinnati and Temple have pled no contest. Does that mean they were thinking about taking a plea? Were they thinking about pleading guilty and decided to go no contest? What happened there in that game?
Yeah, the Latin term they use in court is nolo contendere, and I have no earthly idea. it's funny, the AAC reached out to us and probably every other show in America to get the commissioner on today to plead Cincinnati's case, and he may have a hard time, and he is an accomplished lawyer.
Yeah, that is a good point. So, okay, let's just start there quickly before we get back into the SEC. We watched their game, or at least I did, against UCF. That game was big game in the middle of the day on Saturday. They came back. They won. A good win, but here the rankings come out. They're seventh. What do you really think of the Bearcats? Do you really believe that they should be taken seriously and be there at the end if they go undefeated?
No, I don't. I mean, I think they're a really good team, and I've watched them a couple of times as well. And I mean, they have everything they need except a really quality schedule that's necessary. No way of getting around that, and unfortunately for them, I don't see any way that they can make up for that. Even you start quibbling Cincinnati in there over a one-loss Texas A&M, a one-loss Notre Dame or Clemson, I don't think so. So in the end, they'll make a good run, but even this week missing a game is not going to help them because they need to be seen and they need to be evaluated.
Tell us which opportunity makes more sense to you or has a real shot of happening, because we're about to see a first on Saturday in the Iron Bowl. It's not just the Iron Bowl. It's a first since Nick Saban has been the head coach at Alabama. We've never not seen him on the sidelines when they play a game. So do you think Butch Jones has a better chance of moving up from being an intern to the head coach for a day? Do you think Lane Kiffin takes a day off, slides over there, goes to Alabama, and coaches this game? Or do you think Rich Rodriguez finally comes home and coaches that game at Alabama? He finally accepts the job. Which one do you think has the best shot?
Well, you know, the funny thing is Rich Rodriguez in, I think it was 2006, accepted the job.
Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Paul, I was with Eli Gold. He and I were broadcasting a Nashville Predators game at the Staples Center in L.A., and he got a phone call, and he turned to me and he said, "I think we got a football coach, Rich Rodriguez." I'll never forget it. I was sitting right in the press box at the Staples Center. Unbelievable.
That Friday morning, I was on a local show, and we were talking about what a great coach he would be, and then he backed out. I think it's Butch Jones, the answer to your pop quiz. Because, how long can a, 50-year-old man be an intern?
That's what we were saying. Like, how long isn't there like a statute that has run out? Like, you can't be an intern that long, can you?
Yeah, and not getting ahead of ourselves here, but it's very possible that the man who took his place is going to be sitting next to him pretty soon as an intern at Alabama if he's not careful.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll move in and slide into that office space or whatever they have carved out for that position.
They have like desk chairs. Like, remember when you were in fourth grade?
Yeah, usually they or they had the makeshift ones out in the hallway. That's usually where they put me. So, in all seriousness, what is this going to look like without Nick Saban? Do you believe it has any effect or any impact on the game, in your opinion?
I don't, and I think in the Georgia game it did because Georgia was a more formidable team. But what happens here is you know, Steve Sarkisian goes right back to the spot that he would have been in 7 or 8 weeks ago. And I don't think – I think at this point in the year, that was the fourth week. I mean, we're now, what, ninth week of on track. I think Alabama's in a much better spot. And you know, the game against Auburn is big on one level, but Auburn's in trouble. They have a couple of major injuries, and I really just don't think it's going to be a competitive game. And much will be made. I mean, it's deja vu all over again here, but arguably the most high-profile person to have COVID in sports, you know, now that he's had it technically twice. But I don't think it will have much impact. I think the first time around it may have, because Georgia, it's hard to believe I'm saying this, but Georgia came in there into that game with a lot of momentum. I mean, we actually respected Georgia back then.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum. You got one more, Darren?
No, go ahead.
Paul, I was thinking, too, along the lines of Georgia, that with JT Daniels playing the way he did the other day, and it was shocking that they had to work so hard to beat Mississippi State, but did they miss their chance of inserting the right quarterback? This is all hindsight, of course, but he certainly looked way more talented than the other guys they put out there.
Yeah, I think they did, and now the only question is, you know, whether they could have done it much earlier. There's still some mystery to me about JT Daniels and whether, you know, he was ready to play. I know he's been cleared, but there's always that lingering question out there about the other that he had a second opinion that did not give him clearance. So I'm really not certain of that, but. Once again, Kirby Smart is going to be called into serious question on the quarterback situation. And there's no getting around it. You know, I understood the decision years ago to stay with Jake Fromm. Everyone seemingly did at the time. But right now, this guy's got, he's got two losses, but it seems like it's a lot worse than that. And by the way, I mean, I don't know how they ended up getting in the top 10. Last night, that has not been a really good. I mean, that team barely got by Mississippi State, which was playing with. I'm not even sure they had 50 scholarship players on the roster Saturday night.
Wow, Paul Feinbaum is with us, SEC Network, ESPN. He is brought to us by MTGRT.com and Gary Force Acura.
I think it was 46, by the way.
Yeah,
I think that's right.
I mean, they of all the schools this year that could have said we're not playing, they could have easily said it. I mean, they were significantly under the number, and you know, which makes me you wonder how they played their best game of the year since LSU. But that's a hard team to figure.
No question.
Maybe they were fearful of getting called chickens. You know, you never know.
So
that's why I won't call them that now.
No. What do you think of that whole back and forth with Dabo Swinney and Mike Norvell? What did you make of that?
I was entertained by it, and I think you have to try to analyze Dabo on a less than intellectual level. And I think Dabo is just back to being us against the world. He doesn't care how he finds an edge, he finds one. And he stood up for his team, a little bit like Dan Mullen a couple weeks ago in a completely different set of circumstances. Players respond to that. Dabo has never talked about COVID with the same level of attentiveness that epidemiologists have. And you know, it goes back to even to the very beginning of the pandemic. And I just think he views everything through the prism of football. And I don't know why Florida State didn't play the game, because there's been no evidence of transmission on the field. And I think they just decided to stomp their feet. I'm as concerned about this pandemic as everyone, but you know, right, very few people in college football have seemingly cared to do anything that anything about it they didn't have to. So I found Florida State's reaction to be, you know, less than genuine too.
Paul Feinbaum is with us, sort of tied in to the last couple questions with the rankings. And most of the time, I sort of just blow off the first rankings. But they did have a lot of pieces to the puzzle to put together, with some teams playing three games and others playing a lot more. I guess we're not really surprised at all about the first four. Anything in the table setting that the committee told you that we should be looking for? Because, as you said, the SEC did very, very well with Texas A&M, Florida, all in the top, Texas A&M, Florida, and Georgia, all in the top 10.
Yeah, I thought, you know, you're right. It's not particularly relevant, the first one, because there's so many cubes that have to be dealt with, and there, you know, so many, you know, you have, you know, in the top five or six, a couple of rematches coming up. You have Alabama, Florida, and Notre Dame, Clemson to be determined. But I clearly think there's a path for the SEC, and I can't remember when the SEC has had three schools alive this late. Now, last year, Alabama was technically in it until they lost to Auburn, but I mean, it's pretty remarkable that the SEC is in this position, and so is the ACC. So I thought that maybe the Ohio State snub was the most important, because, you know, they were basing that on number of games played. I still don't think Ohio State has much to worry about. But the weirdest footnote of the season, I think, right now is that Northwestern controls its own destiny. I mean, that was not a school I had really high on my list when we were convening for the season a couple of months ago.
Yeah, how about that? They are very solid, not spectacular, but they keep winning, that's for sure. So, Paul, let's get to Vanderbilt. Intriguing story. We're all watching Nashville's soccer team pull a big upset in the MLS playoffs, and the story is unfolding from the student newspaper that the kicker from the SEC champion soccer team the goalie from the SEC championship soccer team has joined the football team because they apparently have some quarantine issues with the kickers, who were doing pretty poorly anyway. So, very intriguing twist to a pretty interesting story. I wonder where it goes from here.
Well, thank you, number one, for letting me know that Vanderbilt was playing football this fall. it is intriguing. I say that jokingly. For a team that's going to go 0-10, unless it beats Tennessee in the final Saturday of the year, they have played pretty hard. I say that, you know, with admiration and respect, because I was fearful before the season that Vanderbilt would have an impossibly difficult time even finishing. They were going to be so far down on numbers, but I'd say good for them. I haven't seen the kicker very much, but it can't hurt, can it?
The one guy that has kicked has gone 3-for-7. They had another guy opt out, and the highest recruit hasn't been in a game yet, so that tells you what they think of him. They had a male soccer player that kicked extra points for a couple of weeks. So it has been, you know, they've had a list of things, as you know, Paul, as you just, you know, got done saying. They got a lot of problems besides the kicking game, but that has been one that's been particularly bad. And I guess they've got some issues as to with either contact tracing or positive tests, where all of the kickers are in jeopardy. And so they had the goalie who was there, like the rest of the student body. It's not like they'd have tryouts, you know, from the student body. They're all home, right? So this could be a really intriguing situation. And, of course, it's never happened in a Power Five game before.
Well, leave it to Vanderbilt to make college football history.
Well, at least they have an option with her there. She's a pretty good goalie.
Can you play quarterback?
Yeah, do they have any quarterbacks? That's a great question.
Speaking of that, as we wrap
something today.
Yeah, no doubt. Speaking of that, let's end with this, Paul. They were supposed to play each other, of course, Vanderbilt and Tennessee this Saturday, and that didn't happen. If they do indeed still play this season and Vanderbilt wins that game, what do you think that does for Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer, who gave him an extension before the season even began?
That's the doomsday scenario. And if you're a Tennessee fan, you're going, I hope we end up going 3-7. I mean, because losing to Vanderbilt in 2-8, let's see, right now it's at 5 losses. It will likely be at 7 unless Tennessee upsets either Texas A&M or Florida, which, you know, would be pretty significant wins. If Tennessee ended the season on an eight-game losing streak, which I think would mirror the eight-game winning streak,
yep.
I think the odds of Jeremy Pruitt somehow surviving that would be questionable because, you know, right now I think everyone's saying he's going to survive, and I tend to believe that. But you lose to Vanderbilt on top of everything else. I don't know. I mean, that would be – he would literally burn his last goodwill card. And right now his last goodwill card belongs to Philip Fulmer because I don't hear a lot of, you know – I mean, I think it's gone from, you know, average to bad to worse to now it's, you know, can we just get to next year? But that might be – I wouldn't want to say the final straw because I don't know if it's even that bad, but that would be cataclysmic.
Yeah, the quarterback situation is really just that's the one that everybody's having. Like, what are you doing? Like, you keep saying Garantano gives you the best chance to win. In the last 2 weeks, Garantano hasn't been able to give you a win because you've been playing the freshman late in the game because you weren't going to win the game. So, if that, you know, what are you doing at this point whenever you know you might as well just see what the freshman can do? You're not saving a season. This season is lost. It's gone. So I don't know. That's one that's probably the most perplexing of all, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, and it just shows you that, you know, Jeremy Pruitt is just trying to camouflage the disaster that is this season. I think if he had just pulled the plug a couple weeks ago, and you don't have to say it, but you could let people know we're planning for the future. At least that gives people hope.
Yep.
He hasn't given anyone hope.
Yeah, well said. We're thankful for your visit. Have a wonderful day off tomorrow and rest of the week, and enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Appreciate you doing this.
Thank you, guys. Always enjoy. Have a great Thanksgiving.
All right, you too. That is Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. We will come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase here on this rainy Wednesday, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Well, I mean, like right now, we're just looking at, you know, I mean, all options. Sarah, her coach, Darren Ambrose, and I are, you know, I mean, extremely close. Obviously, you know, like I followed them through the tournament. And you know, I mean, for us, it's like any, you know, any week in college football, you're sort of subject to testing. And then, you know, I mean, based on testing, I mean, you got to figure out, you know, options of where you go. So, like for us, you know, talking to Sarah, she's a champ, and no pun intended. I mean, just coming off an SEC championship in soccer, and then you know, coming out and just looking at, you know, what we do and how we do it, and she's a complete competitor. She's an option, you know, man, for us. And so right now, that's where we sit.
Derek Mason, we had him on the show yesterday in the final hour. Of course, he had just completed his Tuesday presser with the media, so it's hard during the show to follow exactly what's going on during his presser. We would learn kind of later in the day some things that were coming out, including that story. So that was Derek Mason this morning on Robbie and Rex Road talking about their kicking situation that we brought up with Paul Feinbaum. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. May give that a little bit of a pour tomorrow. But there you go.
We have some in our house as well. But
Wait a minute. Really?
Yeah, we figured, hey, they're sponsoring the show.
We should
sample the product here.
Awesome. I did not have you pegged as somebody that would give it a little bit of a pour. Good for you. Good for you guys. Let me know what you think.
I will.
So what do you think? Where is this headed?
Well, let's look at the timeline here, right? When we talked to Derek Mason, it was notable. We got a call from them saying they have switched because of the scheduling swap where they were now playing Missouri instead of Tennessee. They switched their practice time to the afternoon. So we had Derek Mason on before practice. So little did we know.
That's right. They switched. That's right. They switched things
around.
So
he was getting ready to go out on the practice
Correct.
Field when yep. we talked to him. And we had no idea that this was brewing. We found out that a guy that led them in tackles last year, who's gone through a saga, You know, he had death in the family. He opted out. He came back in, and now he's transferring. Dimitri Moore, we got that sort of nailed down. That was unclear after his press conference. And Derek Mays, he's the first to say, you know, there's so much up in the air every day, right, with testing, and you're waiting for test results, and you have a couple days before his results, but you don't have the tests that came in this morning. So you can't ever have a moment's peace as a football coach because you just don't know what the next round of tests are going to tell you. So I think I've got this right. Simon Gibbs, who is the writer, he's the lead writer for the Vanderbilt Hustler, the student newspaper, right? The Buster Olneys, the Skip Baylesses, mm-hmm. the Tyler Kepners, they all came through there, Mitch Light.
It's a pretty cool list of people.
Yeah. Yep. So he broke the story that yesterday, Sarah Fuller, who was the starting goalie on the team that just won four straight games and won the SEC championship in soccer, suited up full pads for practice yesterday. It was just a walkthrough, but they've got issues. I mean, let's just be honest. If you've watched their games, they've had issues in the kicking game all year. Their kicking game has been terrible, right?
It's not the first time.
Definitely not the first time, but this might be the shakiest I've ever seen it. They have one kicker that has gone 3-for-7, and he made one last week against Florida. It was an easy one. But he has been very, very shaky. They to the point where they even took him off of kicking extra points for a while and had a walk-on who was a soccer player, and Vanderbilt does not have a soccer team. But he came in and could at least kick extra points. It was that desperate. It's been really hard to figure out that position to start with. And now on top of that, there are some COVID issues with the kicking room, if you will. And so they brought her in, and now you've got Coach Mason on Robbie and Rex Road this morning confirming that it's an option. Now, every day is a new day, right? I don't know when their practice is scheduled today, but I would guess today or tomorrow they're going to have to find out, is she the only option for them? Because that might be the case, and what a story it would be. There's never been a female kicker in a Power 5 college football game. What a great challenge that would be.
Do you think this happens?
Well, okay, here's the quote from Derek Mason. Right now, we're just looking at all options. We just played it. For us talking to Sarah, she's a champ, no pun intended, coming off the SEC championship in soccer. She's an option for us. Right now, that's where we sit. He would just not confirm what the story is. But I'm trying to look and see. They have not revealed any specifics on what's going on in the kicking room. In terms of who, you know, are these kickers even eligible to come out on the field, or can they be eligible by Saturday to kick, to give them any other option? But I don't, it sounds like this has got a shot.
I think so too. I really do. And that will make big time news. That will make national headlines. It will.
And this is a game where, hey, the way they've been playing, you know, Missouri.
Sure.
Missouri is.
The problem is you just don't know what Missouri is.
Yeah, Missouri can look pretty good on a given Saturday, but I got to figure that Vanderbilt could be competitive in this game.
Well, let me go to DraftKings and look. I haven't even looked at it. So the line is, which weird, by the way, it's weird to see college basketball lines, which is a welcome sight, but it's just weird. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that in a while. Let's just say that. Okay, that is the early kickoff, right? Well, so they've got all the Thursday. Okay, here we go, Saturday. Kentucky, Florida. Wow, Florida's more than a 3-touchdown favorite.
Yeah, they
Vanderbilt, Missouri. What do you think it is?
11 a.m. I will say Missouri by, let's just say, I'm going to say 13 and a half.
Close, 14.
14, okay.
The problem with Missouri is you just don't know what team it's going to be.
They've won three, so you've got to give them that, right? They have beaten some teams.
Sure, that's what I'm saying, but you just don't know.
But they've
know
also, they got destroyed by Tennessee. Destroyed,
that's what
which
I'm
looks
saying.
Odd
what,
now.
What are they? By the way, Tennessee was a 12-point favorite against Vanderbilt. Missouri's a 14-point favorite. Now, albeit it would have been on the road, this is a home game for Missouri, but still, it just tells you the level of, you know, where Tennessee is right now, what the odds makers think of them. That's what it was going to be. And probably my guess is it was going to start going down before. It was not going up. It was going to go down. But that's neither here nor there. It's not going to happen this Saturday, so it really doesn't matter. But, yeah, 14-point favorite, Missouri. And the way Vanderbilt's been playing, they got leaned toward the points.
Hmm. Well, here's what I've been looking for Simon Gibbs, because it has not been reported. But he says, I have not had any form of confirmation that you'll play on Saturday. This is Sarah Fuller. Or play at all. While Vanderbilt has struggled with kicking this season, and that's saying it mildly, this is COVID-related. I'm hearing specialists are in quarantine. This is not due to performance, although you could certainly argue that she has a chance to do better than at least some of the guys. I don't know what her range would be. You know, when you're the goalie, you punt and kick, right, routinely throughout the game. Of course, you're punting a round object and not a football. But that would be, I mean, this would be a tough position for her to be thrown into, to say the least, right? But, I mean, I don't know if she's ever done it, even just for fun, but now a crash course trying to do this for 3 days, you would imagine extra points would be about the expectation level.
But this is not anything crazy. It's not a crazy notion. I mean, I've told the story before in high school going into my senior year. I was on the soccer team, and the football coach approached me in the off season and handed me a bag of balls and said, I'd love for you to be our kicker next year. You can do, obviously, both, but would love for you to be the kicker. I'm not trying to prevent you from playing soccer. You can do both, but we just want you to be our kicker on Friday nights. And I did. I practiced for a little bit. I enjoyed it, but in the end, I just decided I didn't want to do it. And so I told him thanks, but no thanks. So it's not – he didn't even know me. I mean, it's not like we had some relationship. I had some, I had the football coach in several classes. No, he didn't really know. He just knew of my leg and on the soccer team, and he wanted a soccer kicker. He wanted somebody who could kick the ball. They were struggling. They were a good team, but they had struggles at that position. So it's not crazy. I know that stuff goes on. You know, that was a long time ago. So think about it today. I mean, that stuff probably goes on all the time. So it's not that crazy. Yes, it's completely different. But look, if you can kick, you can kick, right? I mean, that's the way I look at it. If she's got a leg, she's got a leg, and she can make field goals. I mean, they're not going to ask her to kick a 52-yarder, right? I mean, they just need some more consistency.
Well, that'll be interesting today to see if it goes a step further, because yesterday she just suited up and she went through the walkthrough. She didn't really actually practice. But if this goes further and they just don't have anybody else available, remember the students are gone, so it's not even like you could have a tryout and just see who shows up, right? She might be the only viable option there.
You're saying there's no Vince Papale going to show up and be the kicker?
Well, and you know what's interesting is I used to do a weekly high school magazine show, the Tennessean High School Sports Show, eons ago. I'll never forget the first story. Feature we did was a girl from Kenwood, soccer player that was their kicker, right? And they had a really good team. They were in the playoff games, so I know there have been some girls that have kicked, for high schools, and apparently on the college level and some level they have specified never in the Power Five.
I thought Colorado did.
Well, it says never Power Five, so okay. I don't know where it's been done, but that would imply that it's been done on the college level.
I guess it
wasn't.
I thought Colorado had a female kicker at one point.
I saw an extra point. Now, this Pearson Cook has been the guy that has been the field goal kicker. He has gotten better since the beginning. He missed some ridiculously close field goals the first few weeks, and it was driving Derek Mason crazy, you could tell. He was replaced on extra points. In the last couple weeks, he's looked better. He hit one last week. He made the extra points. He's back kicking extra points, and he did. I'm trying to think. It was the game against Kentucky. I think they tried a 50-yarder, and he hit the upright. He's got a leg. He can crush the ball. It's a matter of accuracy for him. I have not seen anybody else kick. And then the other question is, when they say the specialists are in quarantine, does that mean the punter as well? Because the punter hadn't been all that great. Shakes, he actually punted one. I don't know if you saw this, Darren. He punted one in the stands. Shanked one off the side of his foot. It went for 12 yards. It went directly to the side and landed in the parent section where the Florida parents were sitting. It wasn't very good. So the bar is low for Sarah Fuller. And I watched some of her games in the tournament. She looks great out there, you know, with the goal kicks and the punts. So it would be the heck. I mean, you got nothing to lose, right? That's how you have to look at it: is support her the best you can and just do the best you can, if that's what it comes to. But what a story that would be.
Speaking of somebody could kick a soccer ball, I don't know if you saw this, but we did start off the show talking about Nashville SC shutout victory over Toronto yesterday. How about this? You know, even if you don't follow soccer very closely, you've heard of Diego Maradona, right?
Oh, yeah.
He unfortunately has passed away at age 60.
And he has been through a lot the last...
Yes, he has.
...decade or so.
Legend for Argentina.
Wow.
I didn't know he was just... Honestly, I felt like he was older than 60.
Yeah, it does seem like that. Man, you talk about a guy that... Like you said, that's the ultimate compliment, is even if you have no idea about soccer, you
even
definitely
don't
knew
follow
who
it,
he
you
was.
Knew
he, yeah. yeah, you knew yep. who he was.
The other piece of news is Nick Saban will not be on the sidelines in the Iron Bowl, Alabama and Auburn. Remember that Paul Feinbaum brought up the Georgia, remember where he was out all week, but he did coach that game, right? I mean, he was cleared and coached that game.
Yes.
So this is going to be the first time he's never been on the sidelines.
If you remember, he kept getting retested, and they
yes.
deemed, because he kept testing negative, that it was a false
positive
to begin with.
Correct.
So this time they're saying there's no doubt about this because he has symptoms, and so he has been ruled out, and there's no, well, maybe if this or that happens, he is out for this game.
Now, we had fun with, you know, who would be the replacement, who's going to be in charge. Somebody's got to be in charge. In all seriousness, I guess it's got to be Sarkisian, right? I would assume.
That would be my guess off the top of my head, but I don't know. I don't know the other candidates as well. So I'm sure it'll be up to Nick Saban. I wonder if he's given this thought. I would imagine as prepared as they are as a program, probably any program would have to make a contingency plan under the circumstances, because this could happen to anybody. You see all the head basketball coaches that have the virus right now.
Well, remember, Lane Kiffin darted the program and in going into the national championship game, right, against Clemson. He left and took the Florida, was it Florida Atlantic, right?
Right.
He was at FAU.
Right.
So he just left them high and dry, didn't coach the national champ, or didn't, wasn't the offensive coordinator for the national championship game, and Sarkisian in that year, in that 2016 game, was the interim OC, if you remember, and they lost. And he bolted to go to the Falcons. So he spent, I think, a couple seasons with the Falcons, and he has been back as their OC and quarterbacks coach the last couple last season and this year. So, I don't know. I mean, he's a former head coach. I mean, you could say, well, Butch Jones has been a former head coach. Yeah, but Sarkisian's the OC. Butch Jones gets coffee and donuts in the morning, I guess. I don't know exactly what he does. But Sarkisian, you know, he has been a coach, you know, big-time program. So
well, that's the one thing I would like to know is if Butch Jones is even eligible to – forget about even being the head coach or the acting head coach. Is he – just to have an extra body on the sideline to fill in if they slide everybody up a notch somewhere, is he allowed to do that at this stage? Or is his position strictly – that and cannot be, you know, there's a maximum of how many coaches you can have, which is why they've created this, right, for the Butch Joneses and the Lane Kiffins and the Steve Sarkisians, right? You can't have 100 coaches on the sideline, right? There's yeah. a limit to how many you can hire. So I don't know how that works in a situation like this.
Time will tell. I'm sure we will learn something. It's just Wednesday. We will definitely learn something at some point because I guess – they will announce it. I don't know. I don't think there's any really real advantage, right? I know a lot of times coaches like to play secret. I've got a secret. But with this, I don't really think that's going to give Auburn any advantage, I don't think. So we'll probably know something. We'll come back. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel will talk as they get prepared for the Colts Sunday up at Indianapolis. He will talk to the media like he normally does at this time on Wednesday. So we'll start the second hour hearing what he has to say. That's next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.